Welcome to Rework, a podcast by 37 Signals about the better way to work and run your business. I'm your host, Kimberly Rhodes. In last week's podcast episode, 37 Signals co-founders Jason Fried and David Heinemeier Hansen discussed their philosophy behind hiring managers of one. This week, we're talking about another one of their hiring suggestions, which is to hire great writers. They talk about this in their book, Rework, and they're here to talk about it today on the podcast. Guys, let's jump right in. I understand from the book that you two think it's important for everyone at the company to be a good writer, like regardless of their position. Tell me about that.
Yeah, there's a number of reasons for it. And it starts at in the hiring process. So the first thing we look at is the cover letter. And it's kind of the only thing we actually look at initially. Like we get a cover letter, we get a resume. Resumes are historically kind of BS. They're just, you know, bullet points summarizing the best possible read of a history, which is fine. But the real tell is in the cover letter, because that's where you can see who this person is. Like, what do they want this job? How do they explain themselves? Are they clear thinkers? Are they creative presenters? Whatever it might be. That's where it begins. And it's important because the majority of our communication here at 37 Signals is written. Since we don't have a lot of meetings and we don't do much else we don't get together in person very often, you have to write. You have to explain yourself very clearly by writing, by thinking out loud in words that you put down on the screen. And that's it. That's why it's so important for every single position to be able to be a good writer.
And I think it really also just sets the tone from day one that this is how we collaborate. If you're going to struggle writing an application, you're really going to struggle once you show up on the first day and what you're met with is a chat room and a bunch of messages and these other ways of communication. But I think it's not necessarily just something that's relevant for a completely remote organization. And one of the first topics I remember I was talking to Jeff Bezos with when he bought a small slice of the company back in 2006 was this idea that he, right from the get-go, installed the idea that his meetings, and they were a company with tons of office spaces and actual meetings, but they would start with reading a memo that someone wrote up. That it would basically start as a silent meeting, as though they were remote, that first you have to read through someone having thought through, why are we here? Why are we having a meeting at all? Because I think this is one of the great clarifying things about writing, is that you think you might have this crisp concept in your head, and hey, let's just call a quick meeting and we'll just hash it out. And your concept is not crisp at all. It's totally crumbled. And if you try to straighten it out on a piece of paper, you realize just how crumbled it is. And sometimes you'll realize, oh, actually, this is a terrible idea. Why even call a meeting at all? Because this is not worth meeting about, because either I haven't done my research and there's more work to be done, or the idea is simply poor. It falls apart under your own personal scrutiny, which is the best possible time for an idea to fall apart before you bother other people with it, if you can exact the scrutiny of simply trying to commit it to words. It's interesting because it's so similar to how programmers often get stuck. They get stuck on something, something they're dealing with. And if you force them to first write down how they're stuck, so often they will solve their own problem. It is this act of trying to explain in clear writing where you're stuck that provides the key to getting unlocked. So I think that's really the forcing function, is to really force all thoughts through this funnel of writing. And there's just so much crap that gets filtered out. You can bullshit a whole lot, which is actually funny. On this podcast, one of the things I enjoy doing afterwards is to read the transcript. And sometimes I have in my head that I was really crisp and I was really on point. And I'll read the transcript for something I said. And it was like, yeah, no, that wasn't crisp, but that wasn't on point at all. Writing is the magic filter for taking off bullshit.
Well, and it's interesting because, David, I assume that if we didn't have such strong writers, you guys wouldn't have been able to just spin up a blog, like the developer's blog that you guys have. That's not something you could just all of a sudden be like, yeah, I want to do a blog, if you didn't have people who could really express themselves well in the written word.
This is the second magic of writing, is that there's so many byproducts. So, for example, if we write up a proposal rather than call a meeting with three people, that proposal gets A, to live forever, B, to be read by someone else coming along wanting to learn something about that project later. So this is why, for example, we just recently had this discussion. We were having these betting table meetings when we were deciding on what to do with the next cycle of work we were going to do. And the betting table was growing because we had more people, more teams, more folks who had to be involved. And we were having a hard time cutting down on that. And all of a sudden, we're looking at a meeting of, wait, are we going to be 7 or 8 people in this meeting? That doesn't feel like us. We have other essays talking about how meetings are toxic and they get extra toxic the larger they are. What was the answer? The answer was to solve it with writing. Solve it with the bulk of that work happening as written products that 8 people can look at or 10 people or 14 people can look at. It doesn't really matter. It doesn't have this exponential function. Meetings get exponentially worse the more people are in the room. Writing? No, completely linear, completely linear. Someone can read a write-up that we detail. Brian, for example, can write up a pitch about some new feature. And if you have 5 people reading it, it'll take them a combined, 5 minutes to read or 10 minutes to read. And if you have a few more, it's a linear curve. It is such a better way to do the bulk of collaboration that isn't happening in this sort of realm that can only be sorted in person, which, to be fair, there's also some of that. We're not saying replace every human interaction ever with totally considered writing. That's not what this is about. Just like, you know, the bulk of it.
So, Jason, you mentioned the cover letter being how you guys find good writers. Are there other parts of the hiring process? Because I would think that cover letter is just that, you know, first thing to get you to stand out. When you're trying to decide between candidates, how are you using that kind of writing strength in that process?
Yeah, I can only speak to the design hiring process because that's the part I'm part of. But what we do at the end of the process for the last few people is we give them a project to do. We hire them for a week actually to do a project for us. And even though it's a design project, the deliverable is essentially a write-up of what you did and why you did it and your thought process and however you want to present, whatever you want to present. But you've got to write it up. And that's another place where you begin to separate people. Great design work, but can't explain themselves. Or, you know, really good explainers, but like they spent all the time explaining and kind of fell apart on the work. You kind of want to see a good balance of both. But primarily what we're looking for besides good work is the ability to explain yourself and make a pitch, like persuade or explain or talk about the things you didn't do, whatever it might be, however you want to do it. But that's another great giveaway. Can this person, you know, basically speak for themselves? Can they present an idea on their own and make a case? If they're not able to stand up in front of 5 people verbally and present, you know, so that's a big part of it too.
We have the same thing on the programming side. Every programmer will do a take-home test. It's a little shorter than the one we do in the design, but it is also a form of prose. First of all, you'll describe in prose how you've solved something, but you'll also describe in prose through your code. This is one of these big things for us, that we treat code as prose. I analyze code in much the same way as I was analyzing prose. Are you succinct? Are you clear? Are you picking the right names and terms for things you're trying to implement? If we were to sit down with a designer who's not fully versed in all the code stuff, would it make sense to them? So much of the work that we do is this collaboration between designers and programmers. And we need to be able to speak a shared language. So if you're coming at it as a programmer who can only speak in heavy jargon, who can only use these esoteric terms to describe things that maybe some other programmers would understand, that's really a ding. And I think this is actually also one of the things that serves quite well to separate some types of programmers who perhaps can end up being very impressed by the specific jargony terms that they've accumulated over a long career. And you're like, that's not actually a benefit to you. The benefit is if you can understand those things, but then explain it to, I was about to say a layperson, but that's not what it is. Our designers actually do know code. They're in it. They understand it, but it still has to be clear and succinct. And that just comes across very easily when you look at a piece of code as you would at any piece of prose.
Amazing. Well, I think this is very straightforward. Before we wrap up, David, I mentioned the developer's blog. Do you want to tell us a little bit about that and what people will find over there?
Yeah, so we just started the developer's blog. It's at dev.37signals.com. Yes, that's right.
It sure is.
It's a great example of what happened when you look for great writers when you hire. Because lo and behold, there's a bunch of great writing on that blog. Not just great technical content. Sometimes you can have great technical content that is not very well presented. It doesn't have a clear story. It doesn't speak to you. But these pieces of writing, they're actually great pieces of writing. And why are they? Because we hire great writers. Because we put such an emphasis on the fact that even technical individuals have to be good writers. And that is different. And it is possible to some extent to be a strong technical person and not be a great writer. I tend to think that there's actually a fair degree of overlap because clear writing is clear thinking. I've seen exceptions. I've seen exceptions where there are technical people who can be really good at this one thing and aren't great at writing. And you know what? That's just, we're not a good place for that. Because as Jason says, so much of the collaboration, and here you have to work with other people, depends on that. So the blog really takes this approach of sharing and telling about our work. All the problems that we run into, hey, here's how we solved it, and here's what we thought through when we were solving, explaining your work. You could basically say any one of those articles could have been a job posting, could have been almost like a cover letter, could have been a submission to one of these at-home tests we did.
Perfect. Well, with that, we're going to wrap. Rework is a production of 37 Signals. You can find show notes and transcripts on our website at 37signals.com/podcast. And for that technical blog David mentioned, you can go to dev.37signals.com.